Top experts accuse the government and Big Pharma of a COVID-19 vaccine cover-up. Joe Rogan makes a profound comment about fluoride on his insanely popular podcast. And Scottish broadcaster Neil Oliver warns a storm is coming for the guilty. Those stories and more tonight. I'm Maria Z of ZMedia.com, and this is Vigilant Fox's Media Blackout. The world continues to see devastating outcomes from the COVID injections. It's imperative that we keep talking about it because governments and the mainstream media would love for everyone to forget that the largest human experiment to ever take place in history, mandated by governments worldwide, has disabled and killed millions. But if we let them get away with this, imagine what they'll do next time. And don't be mistaken, they absolutely will try this again. They've told us they will. Even in the midst of COVID, they told us another pandemic was coming. They've been telling us endlessly about how great mRNA is and how they want to put it in our lettuce, for goodness sake. On this broadcast, we've repeatedly discussed the WHO and their desire for global health domination. So, I repeat again, if we don't expose the crimes of COVID and hold them accountable now, they will try it again. This week, Senator Ron Johnson held a US Senate roundtable discussion where medical experts, political figures, journalists, and whistleblowers accused public health agencies of covering up the truth about COVID-19 vaccines. What are they hiding? Top experts accuse government, Big Pharma, of COVID-19 vaccine cover-up. Medical experts, political figures, journalists, and whistleblowers accuse public health agencies and the mainstream media of censoring and covering up information relating to COVID-19 vaccine injuries and adverse events during a U.S. Senate roundtable discussion held by Senator Ron Johnson titled Federal Health Agencies and the COVID Cartel, What Are They Hiding?, which his office said was intended to expose the truth about how the COVID cartel, meaning federal health agencies, big pharma, legacy media, and big tech, engaged in censorship and in cover-ups. It was heartening to hear these courageous experts willing to risk careers and reputations in order to tell the truth, despite tremendous pressure to look the other way, said Laura Bono, who's the Children's Health Defense Vice President. Bono, who attended the roundtable, added, "We can't ensure that global devastation caused by the COVID crisis will never occur again unless we are able to analyze what happened and speak about it freely." And also expressed her gratitude to Senator Ron Johnson for holding the event. The discussion focused on six topics: COVID-19 vaccine issues, the history of vaccine injury cover-ups, oh boy, is that a long one, the corruption of medical research and federal public health agencies, media censorship and propaganda, the COVID-19 response in other countries, and the World Health Organization's proposed pandemic agreement. Brian Hooker from the CHD, he's the chief scientific officer there, told the defender that he was riveted listening to the panelists during the entire four-hour session. Being here among these heroes was such an encouragement, he said. Hooker is the co-author with Robert F. Kennedy Jr. of Vax Unvax, Let the Science Speak, and he also participated in the roundtable discussion, highlighting the health risks posed by vaccines and the lack of adequate testing by federal health agencies. In his testimony, Hooker said the CDC has never tested the cumulative effect of the vaccine schedule on childhood health outcomes. He referenced several scientific studies to support his testimony, including the evidence of developmental delays, ear infections, gastrointestinal disorders. The likelihood of an asthma diagnosis among the vaccinated group was 4.5 times higher than the unvaccinated group, he said. Hooker said unvaccinated children have shown incidence rates between 4 to 20 times lower than vaccinated children for autoimmune, neurodevelopmental, and other disorders. He also referred to the sharp rise in myocarditis diagnoses following COVID-19 vaccination. He says it's a serious disorder, and 76% of all cases following COVID-19 injection, as reported to the VAERS system, required emergency care and or hospitalization. Yet the CDC significantly downplays myocarditis as a side effect of the vaccine. Further highlighting government inaction in studying and responding to vaccine injuries, Hooker said the 1986 National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act requires that the Department of Health and Human Services report to Congress on the state of vaccine safety in the US every 2 years. Yet the HHS has never submitted a vaccine safety report to Congress. And is this not the same in every single country? Lack of adequate safety data. Now they want to make it so that vaccines can be developed without any safety data. We'll just let AI do it. This is so dangerous. Edward Dowd was also in attendance, former BlackRock portfolio manager, who's extensively studied the increase in excess deaths during and after the COVID-19 pandemic. He is the author of Cause Unknown, The Epidemic of Sudden Deaths in 2021 and 2022. He's been on this broadcast with us before, and he said that government and WHO statements claiming the COVID-19 vaccines were safe and effective have been proven false. And let me just add, time and time again. It has become clear that the US government, along with health regulators, do not desire an honest accounting of policies that were imposed mostly under federal mandates, he said, noting that this has resulted in high human costs. Dowd told the panel, in total, excess deaths since the rollout of the vaccine in the US is approximately 1.1 million for 2021, 2022, and 2023. We estimate the economic cost of productive working age people dying at $15.6 billion and estimate 28.4 million individuals are chronically absent, resulting in an estimated economic cost of $135 billion since 2021. Jessica Rose, an immunologist and biochemist, told The Defender in advance that her testimony would focus on an analysis of the VAERS pharmacovigilance database in the context of the COVID-19 injectable products, which has revealed a strong emergent safety signals from myocarditis to death that are not being acknowledged by the owners of the data. She says this goes against standard operating procedures and begs the question, why? Rose also referred to recent revelations later confirmed by Canadian public health authorities about the contamination of COVID-19 mRNA injections. Is there a risk associated with DNA insertion in the context of the modified mRNA shots? Yes, she said. Dr. Pierre Corey, President and Chief Medical Officer of the Frontline COVID Critical Care Alliance, discussed the suppression of potentially effective treatments by public health agencies. Corey told the panel, the ugly truth is it's not profitable. Big Pharma makes money on complicated new drugs and it controls the levers of power. Nearly half of FDA's budget is bankrolled by the drug industry and its tentacles are deep in academia, medicine, and other regulatory agencies like the NIH. He cited ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine as examples of treatments that were suppressed during the pandemic, despite evidence that they were effective. Do you know, it's fascinating, in Australia, the regulatory authority here, the TGA, actually banned ivermectin right at the time of the rollout and then unbanned it after mandates were completed, after they completed their mandate rollout, I should say. It's absolutely stunning. Lara Logan was also at the roundtable. You can watch her segment in the article. Senator Ron Johnson said that those who asked questions were vilified and ridiculed. In an interview with the Gateway Pundit on Sunday, Johnson discussed adverse events related to the COVID-19 vaccines, the discovery by embalmers of strange white fibrous clots in bodies of the deceased since the vaccine rollout began in late 2020, and efforts to suppress ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine as COVID-19 treatments. Referring to the clotting phenomenon, Johnson said, what's unfortunate is the medical establishment in general, and certainly our federal health agencies, are discouraging autopsies. So the only evidence we're getting of this is from embalmers that are having a difficult time getting embalming fluid into the cadavers. He said, they've had this mRNA platform. It never succeeded in animals, but they knew how profitable of a platform it could be. They've already found out how profitable vaccines are because there's no worry of liability. You just get those things on the childhood vaccine schedule and you just start printing money. Nobody can question the efficacy. Nobody can question the safety of them. So vaccines are highly profitable for pharmaceutical companies, so they're going to push them. And of course, they've got their individuals in government that push them right along with them. Again, our health agencies have been completely captured by Big Pharma. You can view the list of all of the people who attended, including Marjorie Taylor Greene, Del Bigtree, Dr. Robert Malone, Kevin McKernan, who is the chief scientific officer and founder of medicinal genomics. Very, very important source of information. They've been instrumental in bringing out the DNA contamination information, and many, many others. And you can watch the full roundtable discussion on this article, as well as the highlights. It is absolutely vital that we continue to draw attention to this, particularly with the WHO pandemic agreements looming over the world. We cannot let them get away with this. And so we're grateful to Senator Ron Johnson and all in attendance of the roundtable for their ongoing efforts. Now, Senator Johnson highlighted the issue of embalmers finding strange structures inside of cadavers since the injection rollout. We'll revisit this later in the broadcast with a special interview with the lead embalmer, Richard Hirschman, who first broke this story to the world. He has some shocking new information for us, so make sure to stay tuned until later in the broadcast for that. And now a message from our sponsor, The Wellness Company. Everyone knows the next medical crisis is just around the corner. Whether it comes in the form of a pandemic or something much more mundane like a tick bite, you and your family need to be prepared. That's where The Wellness Company comes in. The Wellness Company and their doctors are medical professionals that you can trust. And their new medical emergency kits are the gold standard when it comes to keeping you safe and healthy. Be ready for anything. This medical emergency kit contains an assortment of life-saving medications, including ivermectin and Z-Pak. The medical emergency kit provides a guidebook to aid in the safe use of all of these life-saving medications. From anthrax to tick bites to COVID, even a bioweapon like the plague, the Wellness Company's medical emergency kit is exactly what you need to have on hand to be prepared. Rest assured knowing that you have emergency antibiotics, antivirals, and antiparasitics on hand to help keep you and your family safe. Go to twc.health/blackout today and order. That's twc.health/blackout and use promo code blackout to save 10%. Our next story, RFK Jr. urges investigations into SSRIs and mass shootings. Take a listen to this.
The school shootings in this country, the mass shootings are unacceptable. And we need to be investigating why they're happening in this country. Why are we alone? Why is that happening? Why did it never happen before? Two of the culprits that ought to be investigated, and I'm not saying that we know this, but one is SSRIs, the widespread use of now of this class of psychiatric drugs that has a black box label on it saying may cause homicidal and suicidal behavior. And we now have a large part of the American population on those. NIH, the National Institute of Health, ought to be studying why is it that Switzerland, which has comparable levels of guns, has not had a mass shooting in 21 years, and we have one every 21 hours? Why is that? That is, you know, when I was a kid, kids my age were bringing their rifles to schools for shooting clubs. Nobody ever blinked at that. Nobody ever started shooting at other children in the schools. It just had never happened before. This is unique in human history, and we need to be studying that. Since 1996, NIH has had a policy not to study the etiology of the origins of gun violence, and I'm going to change that.
There is a very comprehensive article posted on the Vigilant News Network website. We encourage everyone to go and read it. It's titled, Do SSRI Antidepressants Cause Mass Shootings? A Closer Look at Decades of Evidence. This is originally appearing on the MidwesternDoctor.com website. And the story at a glance is, SSRI antidepressants have a variety of horrendous side effects. These include sometimes causing the individual to become agitated, feeling they can't be in their skin, turning psychotic, and occasionally becoming violently psychotic. During these psychoses, individuals can have out-of-body experiences where they commit lethal violence either to themselves or others. As lawsuits later showed, this violent behavior and the frequent suicides that followed it were observed throughout the SSRI clinical trials, but were covered up by the SSRI manufacturers and then the drug regulators, for example, the FDA. Once the SSRIs entered the market, there has been a wave of SSRI suicides and unspeakable acts of violence. Sadly, the idea that SSRIs could cause any of this has always been viewed as conspiracy theory or mistaken correlation with causation, because very few are aware of the extensive evidence linking SSRIs to violent and psychotic behaviour, despite it now being on the warning label of those drugs. Again, this is an incredibly comprehensive and interesting article evidencing some of the known links of SSRIs to psychosis, as well as multiple real-life events and cases that definitely require further examination. Be sure to visit vigilantnews.com and read the article in full. Joe Rogan has said there is a direct correlation between fluoride in the water and low IQs. Recently, he sat down with comedian Cat Williams to discuss numerous topics such as propaganda in Hollywood, life expansion technology, comedy, and more. And towards the end of the podcast, Williams and Rogan started to talk about the concerns of fluoride in the drinking water. Take a listen.
There are those of us that know with the pineal gland what medicine says it's for, and what that would mean. And so those people's job is to make sure that there's fluoride in all the water. So your pineal gland will shrivel.
Get calcified, right, or whatever happens
all,
to it.
That's all.
The fluoride thing is wild. The fact that people aren't up in arms about them putting fluoride in your fucking drinking water is so crazy. It's so unnecessary. It's
brilliant on the other end, though.
Oh, yeah.
So what happened is the reason people have that relationship is they cleaned up the water the same time that they did that. You see what I'm saying? Yeah. So people at that time just remember the water not being that great. And then all of a sudden the water is really great and it's got fluoride and it's good for your...
Good for your teeth.
Right.
Despite the fact that there's direct correlations between high levels of fluoride in drinking water and low IQs.
Now, at the end of the conversation, Rogan shared that lawmakers in some states are attempting to remove fluoride in drinking water. You can find an article on this on the Vigilant News Network, Historic Fluoride Trial, Everything You Need to Know. On January the 31st, the second phase of the fluoride lawsuit resumed in San Francisco, California, after nearly 4 years of delays. The proceedings were the latest in an 8-year legal battle between the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency and the Fluoride Action Network. The lawsuit began following the EPA's 2016 decision to deny the plaintiff's petition under the Toxic Substances Control Act. The fan is attempting to prove that fluoride is a neurotoxin and should be regulated or banned under the TSCA. You can actually hear from Michael Connett on the case right here.
What was the conclusion of the May 2022 draft report?
The conclusion is that the human evidence on fluoride and IQ is consistent. It's consistent in showing a reduction in IQ as you increase your fluoride exposure. And it's not only consistent, it's a large database. But it's not only a large database, the evidence is such that the NTP felt confident that potential sources of bias, like confounding or exposure errors or outcome errors, the kinds of things you look to sort of interrogate whether an association between a chemical and a hazard is real, the NTP felt confident that these potential biases are not the reason for this association we see between fluoride and IQ. And that's a really significant thing, a significant finding, because it gives you confidence that this relationship between fluoride and IQ is real. It is causative.
You can also find details relating to the conclusion of the fluoride trial, which has ended now, federal judge to decide on future of water fluoridation, on the Vigilant News Network. It says the fluoride lawsuit has come to an end and now federal judge will decide the future of water fluoridation in the United States. We do not need for every piece of the puzzle to fit before we take steps to prevent harm, Connett nearly shouted during the hearing. We need to take action when we have evidence of risk, and we have that here. Bombshell revelation this week that the CIA built 12 secret spy bases in Ukraine and waged shadow war for 10 years, a New York Times report confirms. On Sunday, the New York Times published an explosive and very belated full admission that U.S. intelligence has not only been instrumental in Ukrainian wartime decision-making, but has established and financed high-tech command and control spy centers and was doing so long prior to the February 24 Russian invasion of 2 years ago. Among the biggest revelations is that the program was established a decade ago and spans three different American presidents. The Times says the CIA program to modernize Ukraine's intelligence services has transformed the former Soviet state and its capabilities into Washington's most important intelligence partners against the Kremlin today. Surprise, surprise. This has included the agency having secretly trained and equipped Ukrainian intelligence officers spanning back to just after the 2014 Maidan coup events, as well as constructing a network of 12 secret bases along the Russian border, which work began 8 years ago. These intelligence bases, from which Russian commanders' communications can be swept up and Russian spy satellites monitored, are being used to launch and track cross-border drone and missile attacks on Russian territory. This means that with the disclosure of the long-time closely guarded secret, the world just got a big step closer to World War III, given it means the CIA is largely responsible for the effectiveness of the recent spate of attacks, which have included direct drone hits on key oil refineries and energy infrastructure. Without them, the CIA and elite commandos it's trained, there would have been no way for us to resist the Russians or to beat them, according to Ivan Bakanov, former head of SBU, which is Ukraine's domestic intelligence agency. A main source of the New York Times revelations, disclosures which might come as no surprise to those never willing to so easily swallow the mainstream official narrative of events, is identified as a top intelligence commander named General Sergei Dvoretsky. You can view details of that, including the description of the secret spy bunker, elite commando force, Ukraine being transformed into an intelligence gathering hub, huge NYT admission that Putin was basically right, and more on the Vigilant News Network. Well, Dr. Phil has gone off script with a stunning criticism of the US government. Many of you would have seen him appearing on The View recently, where he basically left the presenters shocked and speechless with his criticism of the handling of COVID-19. Well, on Wednesday, he appeared on the Breakfast Club podcast with Charlemagne the God and issued a 25-second criticism of the US government that hit far too close to home. Take a listen.
The problem is we got people in charge of solving problems that don't really want to solve them. Because their job depends on having that problem. They need that problem to justify their existence. They need that problem to maintain this huge bureaucracy, to maintain this big budget, this big agency. They need that problem to exist. I think we've got people in charge of solving problems that are not problem solvers.
At this time, the United States is faced with over $31 trillion in debt, life expectancies that pale in comparison to other Western nations, despite spending the most on healthcare, and the largest influx of illegal immigration the country has seen in its lifetime. It really does call into question how much of this is the government doing on purpose. When Dr. Phil, who traditionally focuses on personal, familial, and mental health challenges, shifts his focus to criticizing the failures of the US governance, it's a sure sign that things have taken a turn for the worse. You can view that full interview with Dr. Phil on the Vigilant News Network. And in another long overdue admission, Hunter Biden has finally admitted that Joe Biden is the big guy. Hunter Biden on Wednesday testified to Congress that his father, Joe, was indeed the big guy referenced in an email pertaining to a business deal with a Chinese state-linked energy company that made the Biden family and his friends millions of dollars. He denied, however, that Joe Biden ever received a 10% stake, as was indicated in the text message. At one point, we asked Hunter about the 10% for the big guy. Rep. Marjorie Taylor Greene told Breitbart News following the first son's six-hour closed-door deposition. We showed him the email and he said, oh, that was after my father left office, she told the outlet. What's wrong with having a pie in the sky idea? When he, Joe Biden, left office in 2017, it thought he was done. I had no idea was going to run for president. What's wrong with just some pie thinking that he, Joe Biden, could be in the business, Breitbart? Green said that Hunter insisted that there was no percentage for my father in the business and that the 20 speakerphone calls Joe Biden joined was considered normal. He was saying, it's totally normal for your parents to call you. He said Green. He just totally kept on saying, oh, this is normal, this is normal. Now, according to Green, Republicans need to get ready for Democrats to fabricate another Russian disinformation hoax related to Hunter and the 2024 election, and that it would likely fit the media's existing narrative against both Trump and protecting the Biden family. There's a really weird theme in there with the whole Russian thing, said Green. In November, the House Oversight Committee revealed that President Biden received $40,000 in Chinese funds, which were laundered through his brother, James Biden, in a complicated financial transaction marked as a loan, which took place just weeks after Hunter Biden threatened the Chinese with his father's wrath in a July 30, 2017 text message to a CEFC China Energy employee. Remember when Joe Biden told the American people that his son didn't make any money in China? Asked the Oversight Committee Chairman James Comer in a video posted to X. Well, not only did he lie about his son Hunter making money in China, but it also turns out that the $40,000 in laundered China money landed in Joe Biden's bank account in the form of a personal check. This, of course, came on the heels of another loan repayment from James to Joe for $200,000. Our next story, Tucker Carlson poses an unexpected COVID vaccine question. No lives were saved by the COVID-19 injections, researcher and scientist Dennis Rancor told the Epoch Times in an email. Rancor and his fellow scientists conducted an in-depth post-vaccine analysis looking at over a dozen countries. What they found is that all-cause mortality increased every time the COVID-19 shots were deployed. For every 800 injections administered, Rancor and his colleagues concluded in their 180-page paper that one vaccine-related death occurred. This 1 in 800 number becomes even more alarming when you consider how many doses were given. At the time of Rancor and colleagues' report, 13.5 billion COVID-19 injections were administered. Divide that number by 800, and you end up with approximately 17 million COVID-19 vaccine-related deaths. You can read the full report here. Now, Tucker Carlson has interviewed Steve Kirsch, and this contextual information sets the stage for a recent dialogue between Tucker Carlson and Steve Kirsch, a notable critic of the COVID-19 vaccine and founder of the COVID-19 Early Treatment Fund. Tucker Carlson presented the Silicon Valley entrepreneur with a query about the COVID shots that seemed to catch him off guard. Take a listen.
How can world governments kill more than 10 million people and leave some large undetermined number disabled for life and not say a word about it, not apologize, not work to fix it, not work to make the families whole? I mean, just leave it by the side of the road like a corpse and keep marching. I don't understand that. How can that happen?
Believe me, I'm surprised as well. You know, I can't get an audience with anybody in the United States Congress except for Senator Ron Johnson. Like, I can't have a dialogue. They won't talk to me. Nobody wants to know. They don't want to know the truth. It's like autism in this country. You know, autism's been around for a very long time. And we've known from the statistics that vaccines cause autism. It's the leading cause of autism. Now, can we even get a discussion about that?
Wait, may I ask you to pause? That, I mean, the statement you just made is verboten. I mean, no person who wanted to, say, work at the Atlantic magazine or who takes the New York Times on a daily basis would ever say something like that, because you're not allowed to say that. Or, why do you, tell us why you say that.
I say it's because it's true. Yeah, I've collected my own data just independently to look at the connection between vaccines and autism. And it's amazing. I had over 10,000 parents tell me about their kids. And I said, hey, tell me about your kids. Tell me how many vaccines they've gotten. Tell me if they have autism. Tell me if they have ADHD. Tell me, you know, just tell me about your kids. Tell me about the medical conditions and tell me about how many shots they get. And it's a straight line. The more shots you get, the more likely you are to get autism. And it's the same thing for ADHD. It's the same thing for panda pans. It's the same thing for autoimmune diseases. I mean, it is basically the more shots you get, the less healthy the kids are.
Those who know Steve Kirsch would know he was a Democratic Party supporter before. I mean, in that interview, he describes how he essentially woke up and was stunned at the fact that even with the data being so clear of the danger of these vaccines, that more people didn't realize. He fully expected that within 2 weeks, this whole thing would be over. But it isn't. The mainstream media is still urging people to keep taking these lethal injections. So are governments and health officials worldwide. But here's the reality. They know that if they admit to democide now, it's game over for the New World Order. This is why they are doubling down in every which way possible to destabilize every country's economy, their values, their confidence, their love of country, everything. They would love for nothing more than for us to become weary and to just give up. But that isn't happening. No one is giving up. The one thing they, the globalists, underestimated is the strength and determination of people with integrity. And that brings us to our next story. Neil Oliver warns a storm is coming for the guilty. The Scottish political commentator said on his YouTube channel that millions of lives have been ruined forever by big state, big pharma, and big media, and that the last 4 years have been the most dangerous and blatant assault on freedom and civil rights in the history of humankind. He says, it's palpable that the anger of citizens is rising. It's been on a sort of slow simmer for years. It seems to be coming to a boil. The heat has been turned up, or the heat that's already there is somehow building an intensity. You can't point at any single place on the map, really, and say, here's the seat of it. The building, anger and frustration and heat and pain is everywhere in the West, certainly. And it's for all sorts of reasons. There are many symptoms, all coming from the same disease. By now, we've all endured, 3-4 years of the most dangerous and blatant assault on freedom and civil rights in the history of humankind. That's a fact. And I make no apologies for bringing this up over and over, for worrying at this like a terrier with a rat, because the sustained abuse of our species inflicted on an unprecedented scale, even after all these years, it remains unaddressed, unconfessed, and without consequences for the guilty so far. Let's take a listen to the rest of the clip.
The guilty have grown sore, have been so confident, blasé, that they don't even seek any longer to deny the coordinated global collusion of big state, big pharma, big media, wholesale collusion that ended completely or ruined forever uncounted millions of lives. And it is millions of lives across the West, around the world, directly or indirectly because of policies and practices that have been in place. You don't get to shape the world, reshape the world in your own image, to your advantage, to the advantage of a tiny minority, to the detriment of the hundreds of millions, indeed the billions, and then play the victim when someone somewhere says enough. A person cornered, a person left with nothing, or who feels he has nothing left to lose, is finally free in a fundamental sense. Free to act in any way that suits. I wouldn't be surprised if there's a storm coming, and those who bloody-mindedly sowed the seeds of the whirlwind, who reaped the benefits of so doing for so long, are finally, finally feeling the change in the wind.
Neil Oliver is absolutely right. Although they have tried to wear us down with endless battles, humanity is far more intelligent and resilient than they would like to give us credit for. Sure, maybe not everyone understands the entirety of Agenda 2030 and, by extension, Agenda 2045. But one thing is for sure. They will not tolerate the sexualization of their children in schools. They will not tolerate eating bugs. They will not tolerate having their energy cut off for a bogus climate scam. And they certainly will not tolerate being medically experimented on ever again. The tide is turning for them. So great is their desperation that they are trying to silence us through extreme measures now. Canada recently introduced Orwellian Bill C-63, which officially criminalizes online hate speech. Of course, there's no definition of hate speech in the bill. It's just speech the government doesn't like, usually meaning the truth. The bill allows for punishing people with a $70,000 fine and or lifetime in prison. It could even apply to those who stir up hatred, whatever that means. Australia is trying desperately to pass a bill to penalise independent journalists and anyone, really, with possible jail time for sharing misinformation, which of course is whatever the government says it is. They're getting out of control because they're losing control. The only question remains, how far will they push people until they finally break? We don't want to see violence, but we know everyone has a breaking point. When is enough enough? Our next story, troubling new evidence shows third pipe bomb camera was deliberately turned away from the crime scene on January 6th. Recent and ongoing investigations by Revolver News and the Daily Wire into the Jan 6th pipe bombs and video released in January by Rep. Thomas Massey have raised more questions than answers. You can view the footage in full here on the Vigilant News Network website. But basically, two cars are shown parked, blocking the driveway to the basement garage, a white Washington, D.C. Metro Police SUV and a black Secret Service cruiser because VP Kamala Harris happened to be in the building at the time. A man with a backpack, later identified as a plainclothes Capitol Police officer, steps up first to the Metro car, then to the Secret Service cruiser, cueing minutes of slow milling about by the officers in the two cars. The video shows no effort to cordon off the area or to stop cars or pedestrians, children, from entering the scene near the bomb. Now, the Epoch Times reports that a Capitol Police security camera was turned away from the DNC building during the police response to said bomb. The change in camera view happened 10 minutes before the Capitol Police unmanned ground vehicle fired a water cannon to disrupt the pipe bomb for the second time in 20 minutes. These revelations are extremely troubling and raise even more important questions about the DNC-RNC pipe bomb investigation, Mr. Loudermilk told the Epoch Times. Again, we encourage everyone to go and watch the footage in full on the Vigilant News Network. Our top story tonight, COVID vaccine mandates have been ruled unlawful by the Supreme Court in Australia. COVID vaccine mandates enforced on Queensland police and ambulance workers have been declared unlawful in a landmark Supreme Court ruling. Justice Glenn Marden found the Queensland Police Commissioner Katrina Carroll's direction for mandatory COVID vaccination issued in December 21 to be unlawful under the Human Rights Act. A similar COVID vaccination order issued by the Director General of Queensland Health at the time, John Wakefield, was determined to be of no effect with enforcement of both mandates and any related disciplinary actions to be banned. In his decision handed down on Tuesday, the 27th of February, Justice Marden held that the police commissioner did not consider the human rights ramifications before issuing the COVID workplace vaccination directive within the QPS. While the COVID vaccination directive to Queensland ambulance service workers was found to be lawful, Justice Marden said that the Director General had failed to establish that the direction he made is a term of employment of the applicants. Justice Marden chastised the Commissioner and Director General for their inflexibility in the implementation of vaccination directives and suggested that their actions were not properly supported by the evidence. Neither the Commissioner nor Dr. Wakefield gave close attention to the possible range of solutions. Each was presented with a proposal for mandatory vaccination with little in the way of well-developed critiques of alternative means of reducing illness and infection, said Justice Marden. Moreover, justifications offered by the Commissioner and Director General for the workplace vaccination mandates were taken out of context or not supported by the evidence, while modelling relied upon the Commissioner was in fact nothing of the sort, said Justice Marden. The decision, which resolved three lawsuits brought by law firms Alexander Law and Sibley Lawyers, is the tip of the iceberg, said Bond University Associate Professor Wendy Bonneton. Professor Bonneton told The Australian, there are other cases based on similar grounds, similarly challenging the legitimacy of the directions given during the pandemic. This one is interesting because it is the first one to go through. There will be more of these cases to come. Human rights lawyer Peter Pham of Sydney law firm Matt's Method praised the Supreme Court decision. He said this decision will force future employers and government officials to properly consider human rights when implementing vaccine directions in future, at least in Queensland where there is a Human Rights Act which obligates them to do so. AFAM noted that Victoria and the Australian Capital Territory have similar human rights legislation, but other states and territories do not. However, AFAM cautioned that the court decision has an ominous caveat. He says they won because the commissioner did not appropriately consider the human rights advice she received. However, the court also found that although each of the directions limited the worker's rights to full, free, and informed consent, the limit was reasonable in all the circumstances. So if the commissioner could have proved that she'd considered the advice she received regarding human rights, her workplace vaccination directives would have likely have been considered lawful. The Queensland Health Minister Shannon Fentiman has responded to the Supreme Court ruling, saying the government's still considering its implications, but she says, "The point I want Queenslanders to know is that His Honour did find that placing a limit on human rights around mandatory COVID vaccinations was not contrary to human rights, and in fact it was justified given that we were in the middle of a pandemic." Australian businessman and politician Clive Palmer, who reportedly contributed between $2.5 to $3 million towards funding the lawsuits, said he is considering further legal action following the win. And what really does need to be highlighted here is that the Queensland Health Minister deems that it was justified, and basically this decision opens up ways for the governments to excuse violating human rights in future. Some time ago, I reported on the fact that some government roles being advertised in the state of Queensland listed that employees, as a condition of their employment, would be required to comply with future vaccine requirements. They're already prepping them for it. So the point is, they don't plan on stopping. They're looking for ways to make sure they can force you to be injected in future with no legal repercussions. In a day and age where we have terminology such as workplace vaccine directives, in my opinion, the only appropriate workplace vaccine directive is that they are never mandatory under any circumstances whatsoever ever again. Maybe Queensland Health can consider what embalmers have been finding in cadavers since the injection rollout. You remember at the start of the broadcast that Senator Ron Johnson is discussing this and the fact that the government and health authorities simply refuse to address this widespread phenomenon, not to mention the media silence on it. Richard Hirschman is the lead embalmer who broke the story of the strange white structures he was finding inside of people he was embalming following the COVID injection rollout. Since 2021, more embalmers have been speaking out, with a contributing researcher, Major Tom Haviland, being told by embalmers worldwide that they are even finding these nightmarish, white, long, rubbery structures inside of children. No one knows what they are. Dr. John Campbell recently spoke about this also. A mass awareness is growing, and so they are scrambling to cover it up. But Richard Hirschman reports something even more alarming now. The white, rubbery, long, nightmarish structures are forming outside of the body. He joins us to discuss now. Richard Hirschman, thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate your time.
It's good to see you again, Maria.
It's great to see you as well. Our first interview aired in July of 2022, where you exposed to the world that you were finding very strange structures inside of the bodies of people who'd passed. But for people who aren't familiar with you, Richard, would you just please tell them a little bit about you and how you started to view this?
Sure. I'm a mortician. Some people might call me an undertaker, but I'm an embalmer. We prepare bodies for burial. We replace blood with a chemical preservative, typically called formaldehyde. I started doing this back in 2001. So at this point, I'm about going on 23 years of experience. For the first 20 years of doing this, everything is, you know, fine, hunky-dory. You know, we run into blood clots on a typical basis off and on, but blood clots are normally red and they're jelly-like. They kind of fall apart. But in early 2021, what happened was I started noticing these really strange white fibrous clots. These are not your typical blood clot. They were much stronger than any clots that I had ever seen in the past. And in the very beginning, when I first saw one, I was a little perplexed and thought, well, this is weird. But, you know, sometimes we run into things that are different and didn't think much of it. But as the year progressed, especially through the summer of 2021, I began noticing these strange white fibrous strands again and again. And then in September of 2021, I took a picture, my first picture of one. During this time, I was asking other embalmers that I work with, work around, some of them with 30, 40, 50 years of experience, had they ever seen these things? And the answer was always, they'd never seen anything like it. So I knew I wasn't going crazy. People started asking me how often I was seeing this. And in November of 2021, I started taking notes. And at that time, it was just under 50% of the bodies I was embalming. I started seeing these strange white fibrous clots. And it continued to grow after that. And then, of course, my heart was concerned about humanity because I was starting to put the pieces together, in the beginning, I was thinking, well, maybe COVID is causing this. And then as the summer was going along, in the fall, I started realizing, you know, COVID deaths were going away, but yet these clots are still there. And I started questioning, is the vaccine potentially the cause of these white fibrous clots? And, you know, if your viewers aren't familiar with this, these are the structures I'm talking about, where they literally look almost like a rope, like string. I don't know how well that looks.
We can see it.
But they're quite large, and not always are they super big. But in January of 2022, a wonderful whistleblower happened to be at a funeral, speaking with the funeral director, and they had gotten in talking about the strange things that was going on. And he said, you need to talk to our embalmer. And so I was put into contact with this person, and which was Dr. Teresa Long, the DOD whistleblower. And she then passed on, you know, my information and got in contact with Dr. Jane Ruby, which is the beginning of this publicly being exposed.
Yes.
There were other people in my profession that I worked around. We're all in agreement that somehow this needed to get out into the public attention. And well, so then, since, of course,
since you have come out into the public, Richard, and we're extremely grateful that you have, Major Tom Haviland has been speaking with embalmers. I've interviewed him on multiple occasions to discuss his survey findings, not only embalmers in the United States, but all over the world, Australia, Canada, New Zealand. And there is still to this year, a very, very alarming number of people presenting with these structures, whatever they may be. Now, you told me something very alarming, that you actually have a vial of these structures that formed outside of a body. Can you explain that to us, please?
Yes, just for your viewers to look at right here, this is one piece. Some of that dark stuff in there is some blood that got trapped into it. This formed literally outside of the body after the person had died. I know that it had to have, because there were these large tubes that one went into like the neck region and the other one was into the groin. And it was, I believe this person was on what's called like some kind of an ECMO or a bypass machine, okay, where the blood is taken out of the body, made going through a pump and then oxygenated and then pumped back into the body. At the ends where it goes into the body, there's a cannula and there's a bunch of small little holes that allow the blood to go into the body or that allows the blood to come out of the body. These holes were way too small for these structures to go through. So I knew it had to have formed in that tube at some point. What I believe happened is when the person died, they simply just disconnected it from the machine, plugged the two ends of the tubes together, and just left it alone. So I'm assuming, and I would be willing to bet, that when that person originally died, it was just full of blood. But what happened was, over the time between the time of death and between the time I got to embalm the body, the blood was separating from the serum in the blood, and the blood went to the lower parts and was dark red. And then there was these sections that had this like yellowish gold looking color fluid, which I guess would be the serum. And when I was embalming the body, I simply unplugged the tubes to allow that blood to drain out. And the dark spots, which was where it was, where I disconnected it, were simply blood clots. And it was solid, but it was like a typical blood clot. I tried to catch some. It simply fell apart in my hand, just right. Like grape jelly would. But when that yellow colorish fluid started coming out, these clots right here is what came out in it. So I know these things have to be forming post-mortem, which I believe now with some of the researchers I've been talking to and working with, they believe that these are some kind of foreign type proteins. And something happens whether, you know, they're still alive and they're forming blood clots. And I already know that they have removed these types of clots from living people. So they can happen while somebody's alive. But when the blood stops moving, maybe there's another reason why we embalmers started noticing this right away and early on. I kind of think about it like a cement truck. As it's going down the road, it's constantly turning, keeping the cement from turning into concrete. Once they pour the cement into the ground and create the sidewalk or whatever it is, once that cement is no longer moving, it starts to harden into a solid mass. So what I think is happening are these foreign proteins or whatever this is starting to gel together and creating these abnormal clots that we're seeing. Well, either way, it's still abnormal.
Certainly interesting, to consider the role that the blood plays in this entire scenario, Richard. You mentioned that you've spoken to people and they say that these are some sort of foreign proteins. I know Mike Adams did an analysis of this and found a lot of conductive metals inside of these structures. Do they seem natural to anyone that you've spoken to?
No, nobody says they seem natural. They're obviously abnormal. That's really not up for debate.
Perhaps but, I'll ask the word, know, do they seem organic?
I can't say if they're organic or not. But conductive, you know, some of the people that I'm talking to, like, you know, some of them are a chemist, and they say, or he says, it's kind of like everything has, there's a lot of things have positive and negative charges. And so these elements that are in the body, like Mike Adams found high levels of tin, there's phosphorus, there's these different things, which, you know, that is not necessarily supposed to be in our body. But with these elements and these different charges, then maybe that's what's causing these things to come together through some kind of a positive, negative joining together. Same thing with magnets and different types of ferrous metal. It just will want to cling to that magnet. So with the right substance inside of the body, once it stops moving and everything's not turning around, it can allow these things to kind of come together.
Finally,
does that make sense?
Yes, it does. I want to ask you, Richard, initially you told me, when we first met, that this was predominantly in the injected population. However, you had found at the time, and I'm talking again way back July 2022, you had found that people who had the injections and were perhaps, you know, in close contact, sorry, people who had not had the injections but were in close contact with those who were displaying these white structures. Is that still the case?
The only ones that I found that had the white structures were people that had received some form of a transfusion of some kind, some type of a blood product. Almost all of the bodies I embalm now have clotting issues. I can't say 100% that I've embalmed somebody that didn't have any of this stuff, or that had these things that was not vaccinated. That's really interesting. I do know that there are, I did meet a person who was able to do a kind of a test on his own blood where he spun the blood down and he created one of these white fibrous masses out of his blood. He's not vaccinated, but his spouse is. His spouse also ended up having these kind of fibrous clot formation as well, but it was more of it than his. So it's starting to look like that might be a shedding issue, or it could be, you know, other contamination that we're getting from the food, the water, the air. We really don't know 100%, but this is scary because if, you know, he's got some of this stuff that he was able to create in his blood, then are we all at risk? And I think that is a valid question, and I think it deserves being looked into.
Well, that's certainly the most important question. I think this is why this interview is so crucial, Richard, as is all of the work that you've done to expose this. We definitely need more people looking at this. We need to look at it from all angles and figure out exactly how much of humanity is at risk, especially if this is showing up in uninjected individuals. We simply need more answers and we need more doctors to be looking at it. Richard Hirschman, thank you so much. Please let people know what your X account is.
It's r_Hirschman, HIRSCHMAN.
Thank you very much.
God bless.
We'd like to thank Richard Hirschman and all of the actual experts who are investigating this phenomenon, including those who are looking at the possible synthetic elements of these structures. We'll continue to report on this as more findings come to light. That brings us to the end of this broadcast. Thank you all for joining us this week. Please make sure to like, give us your thoughts in the comments and share this broadcast widely. Follow Vigilant News and Vigilant Fox on X. Visit the Vigilant News Network website for regular updates and find me on X also at Z_media. That's Z-E-E_media and find all of my work on zmedia.com. We'll be back next Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern with the truth the mainstream media desperately does not want you to know. Until then, stay informed, stay vigilant. Good night.